traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Good afternoon, equestrians. This is Scott Miller coming to you live from Sunshine Meadows in Delray Beach, Florida. Wishing all of our equestrian friends out there a very, very Merry Christmas and a Happy Holidays. Hope everything's going good for you. Remember, be kind to people all for the rest of the year. Be kind. Tell them Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. Give them a handshake or a hug. And tell them, you know, that you are glad that they are a part of your day, which I'm glad you guys are a part of my day. And so we're going to get started here. Got a lot to talk about here today, which we always do. And I'm going to try not to put you to sleep until at least 2:10, 2:12, somewhere along in there. You know, a lot of things are happening around at all the tracks across the country. It's really getting good. A lot of the tracks are getting their new dates for 2024, you know, which is exciting because they've added a lot of dates to a lot of the tracks. The horse business is being real good and they're getting a lot of good crowds and the economic impact that it has literally on, you know, the communities is being evaluated and realized by the different states and the different cities and the different organizations. And so they're extending some of the dates, you know, to help boost up that economy for those local people, which the horse business affects everybody in those local areas, from Burger King to, you know, the grocery stores, the Walmarts, Uber drivers, you name it. You know, every business is affected by it. So the more dates they have, the longer they can stay in your community. So remember, when you're out there and you see horsemen or see a horse event, go to it. Check it out. See what they got. You might enjoy it. It's a good thing to do with the family. Canterbury Downs 2024 dates approved by the Minnesota Racing Commission, which they were really glad to see this year. Canterbury Park's request of a 54-day meet in 2024 would start Saturday, May the 18th. Through Saturday, September 28th. It unanimously was approved by the Minnesota Racing Commission. And they got a lot of good things that'll be going on there. The 54-day season will begin 1 week earlier than it used to and conclude 2 weeks later than it used to in 23. So, you know, they've added 3 weeks there to it. So, you know, that's really going to help a whole lot. The average purse distribution weight will be $197,000, which is really good. The 54-day meet days over a longer period of time will allow us to increase the field sizes and additional racing opportunities for those in the horse population. And that's really good because you know, Canterbury needs that to build up their Minnesota breeding program. A lot of those races that will be added to the program will be for Minnesota breeds, and that just goes to help out, you know, the whole equine situation in Minnesota. Canterbury's $15 million stable area and racing infrastructure improvement project continues. They're building. They've built three new barns. A future home of 324 horses is underway and will be completed in the area by May 1st. And that's really a good thing. They've added 36 dormitory rooms to the area and, you know, just really on the improve. And that really helps. You know, that really helps people when they go there. Good for the economy. And, you know, that's at Canterbury Downs, Santa Anita Park in California, set for a day after Christmas meet opener. So they're going to have 49 days of thoroughbred racing through April the 8th. They will have that. That'll go through April the 8th. I tell you what, the first post time this week will be at 11 a.m. Pacific time. The Santa Anita Classic meet includes 49 days of thoroughbred racing, ending April the 8th. A 12-day break at Santa Anita will reopen for its 29th day. Hollywood meet April the 19th. The Hollywood meet concludes June 16th. So it's just like a little mini break in between there. Santa Anita is really doing good. They got some great racing there. They got great entertainment. It just makes a good day for you and the whole family to go out and see. That's at Santa Anita Park opening Tuesday of this next week. Churchill Downs, they struck a deal with Epsom and Ascot racetracks in Europe. Basically, what they're going to do is they're going to run races at Churchill Downs, and it's a win and you're in, kind of like the Breeders' Cup. You win and you're in, and then you get to go to Europe and run at Ascot, and Epsom. And they do the same thing over in Europe to come back here in the States. And that's kind of a thing that a lot of the tracks have started doing. They trying to interact with other racetracks and have a win and you're in type thing, a series of races, kind of like we do here with the Breeders' Cup. We go across the whole Breeders' Cup here in the States, and if you win a certain race or a race that's been identified as a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup, they pay your you win the race, they pay your expenses to get to the Breeders' Cup. They pay some other stipends there that you have, and so it makes it very economical for the Breeders' Cup horses to go to the Breeders' Cup, and the owners really do like that, because that's an added bonus. If you could win the Breeders' Cup, that would be great, but if you don't, at least you're getting your expenses paid for, and that's what they're trying to do internationally now with Europe. It's a fantastic deal, because let's be honest, we don't have a lot of European horses that come here to the States to run, and we have an even less horses go to Europe to run from the United States. And I think it's going to be interesting to see some of the people that get ready to go, over to Europe and race. And we've had limited success with our American horses over in Europe. One, we don't have many going over, and two, it's a whole different way of training your horses for racing in Europe. It's a whole different ball game. Most everything is on the grass. There's very little on the dirt, and it's kind of difficult, to get your horses ready here in the States for the turf, because we don't have a lot of turf races here in the United States that would coincide with races that are in Europe. But we've got a few trainers that are really starting to make a name for themselves on the grass here in the States, and we're going to see just how that transfers over to Europe. We'll see what that'll do. And speaking of Europe, the GBRI Ascot releases episode 4 of An American Dream. The GBRI Ascot released a episode 4 of The American Dream to return to Royal Ascot. And, like we've been talking an awful lot here lately, about distribution of equine information. And when you say distribution of equine information, immediately comes to mind, you think of print and books. Magazines, that type of thing. And what's really taken a hold down, and what I saw coming, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, is the birth of the podcast, both radio and television. And that's really getting big now. There's a good market for it. And it used to be where if you wanted to get, like, say, the Kentucky Derby on TV, it cost you a fortune to get it, placed on one of the networks. If you wanted to do a local show, it costs a lot of money to get it done. And a lot of people just weren't paying, put their product out there. But now it's gotten to a point where you need to get your product out there. It's very economical to do both, TV and radio of your programming. Your biggest cost comes in the production of your programming, and it makes it tough, but a lot easier for a lot of the places to show. For example, quite often we have Wellington International. It's the showgrounds in West Palm Beach. And they have fantastic shows that attract international writers and some of the best writers in the world to their weekend of programming. And so now Wellington International is now made available on YouTube and other media outlets so that they can broadcast their programming live. They've got a real good crew there, professional announcers, not like me. I told them, I said, that's the worst thing that could happen to me on my podcast. If I get a lot of people listening to me, then I got a lot of critics. But if I don't have anybody listening to me, I don't have any critics, and I'm a happy camper. So that's what it's all about. But no, all kidding aside, a lot of the places are doing that, especially Polo. 2-3 years ago with Polo, it was hard to get Polo on television. And I talked with a lot of my Polo friends here in Wellington. And, now all of a sudden we've got Polo just about every week. And that's really good. And, the greatest thing in the world about it is you get a lot of the owners and trainers and Polo players that like to be on TV. They like that. And so, you get a good staff of announcers and, you get a good staff of production people and it becomes a success. And then, once you get to be a success, you get a lot of advertisers. And that's what's coming up. But Polo's really becoming a hot thing now. And what I like about it is a lot of the Polo matches, are played during the week and the big ones on the weekends. So it makes it an ideal place to go, like I have, on IEN. We come up here and there's all kinds of things that, that we can get, here for the people to take a look at, and it's kind of exciting and it's lending a lot more interest to Polo because of the Polo matches, that they have. That's exciting. We got coming up here on IEN, we'll have the World Racing Awards, more in focus on the IFHQ A Quarterly. And it's a nice little program that comes on, and it talks about the everything in the world of racing, and it tells you who is and who isn't, and it tells you what they did and what they didn't do, and it gives you something to look forward to, to when you come up and watch them, and you'll be able to see the programs like that weekly on IEN and other outlets. One of the things that I like is the Blood Horse magazine. I get a lot of our information from the Blood Horse people. It tells you anything and everything about the world of thoroughbreds. And I mean, they tell you everything. And like, for example, this week, we got three trainers and it's joined the Heisa Advisory Group. So Heisa is one of the regulations that regulate the thoroughbred industry. They're the greatest organization in the world. The thing that I like about Heisa is they're there to educate the people, not only in the horse business, but the public, the general public. We have Dale Romans. He's an award-winning trainer from Louisville, Kentucky, operating Romans Racing. Romans has races in Kentucky, New York, and Florida. He's a member of the board of directors as the vice president of the Kentucky Horsemen's Benevolent and Protective Association. He serves as a member of Churchill Downs Committee and Gulfstream Racing Committee. Oh, boy, I'm having a hard time getting through this. He's so impressive. He's got so much behind his name. He joins John Sadler, California-based trainer, former show horse jumper, who has been training since 1978. In addition to training multiple Eclipse champions, Sadler was previously the president of the Thoroughbred Trainers and a member of association and member of the board of Edwin Gregson Foundation and the Thoroughbred Owners of California. So we've got two right there that have been on board of directors. They've been there, they've done that, and they've seen it all. And so their eyes lend a lot of expertise to, you know, the horse industry, not only as a horseman, but, as a participant in other organizations other than just racing. And then the third one is Shug McGahee, which I'm proud to say I worked for a while. He's a New York-based Hall of Fame trainer and a native of Lexington, Kentucky. Historically, the private trainer for the Laurel Phipps family, McGahee brings 30 years of experience to top horsemen, to the advisory group, and five of McGahee trainees have been inducted into the Hall of Fame. So, you know, what I'm saying is we've got a lot of experience there. And when you get into the Horse Racing and Integrity, Association, you start thinking, how can he help? How can they help what we're doing? They've been there. They've done that. They've experienced a lot of the situations that horses might get into when they're training. That really helps. He knows the protocol of the racing, what you can and can't do. And so that makes it good for what we're doing here in our horse associations. Like John Sadler, he was a former show horse person. And that's really good because, he sees all the business and everything. So, it's things like this that make the associations and what we're doing in the horse business a lot better. From the safety aspect, not only for the horse, but for the employees and the trainers and, to give the general public a good product to see, and that's really a great thing to be. Like I said, we're just all over the place today, with everything that we're doing here. The Kentucky Horse Racing Commission reports a quick start for Kentucky sports wagering. And this is another thing. If you notice, every time we talk here on Fridays, I talk more about distribution of the equine product in all areas instead of just one. And that's the key factor in making a successful business like the horse industry. If you want to be successful, it's about product distribution. And that's what we do here at IEN. We try to talk about it all. One of these days, I'll get a professional announcer in here, and we'll really make some noise. But the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, which oversees sports wagering in the state, has posted its first handle report of combined months of September and October, two months now. This was through October 31st. They had a handle of $340,813,000. That's just in 60 days. That's in 60 days. Let me tell you, when you start talking about a handle like this and money, that kind of money coming into your business, boy, you can do a lot of things with that. That's only 2 months. You can imagine what it's going to be like over the year. And the 2 months that they did it through October 31st, that didn't include the Triple Crown, the Preakness, the Belmont, the Kentucky Derby. It didn't include the Breeders' Cup. It was just 2 months, two of the slowest months that we have in the thoroughbred industry, and that's the kind of money it generated. Now you can imagine what kind of money they're going to be generating with the Arkansas Derby, the Florida Derby, Louisiana Derby, all of the Santa Anita Derby, all the big races coming up, over the next 7 or 8 months. It's going to be unbelievable the kind of money that they're generating. And, it's all about the media. And what's really funny that I've noticed that a lot of the media, they don't know how to handle this situation. They don't know how to handle it. And it's tough on them, you know, because they got to literally create a department that will be able to bring you all the information, you know, firsthand information for show horses, you know, thoroughbred racing, harness racing, quarter horse, you know, sales. You got to literally create a personality for your podcast, your TV program, your radio program, and that's very hard to do. It's very hard to find people that can get together and talk, you know, with intelligence and, you know, be able to forecast the future of, you know, horses that are racing, getting ready for the Derby, horses that are showing, getting ready for the Olympics, polo that's getting ready for, you know, all the world championships, for the sales, you know, what horse is going to be selling good, what stallion's hot, you know, where are these horses coming from, where are they going? You know, you got to create a personality for each show that you have. And that's very hard to do because once you do get it, then you have to keep it going in the same direction, you know. And so that's why at IEN, you know, I'm always pushing equine information distribution. It's all about the distribution, you know, getting the right people together, getting with Blood Horse, getting with, you know, the Breeders' Cup, getting rid of polo, getting ready for all of it. It's tough. It's a tough road to go, I'm telling you. And, you know, that was what we're always talking about. And speaking of the Breeders' Cup, the TV ratings behind the leading football games. NBC coverage of the Breeders' Cup on November 4th registered a 0.51 Nielsen rating, reflecting approximately 834,000 television viewers. You know, that's pretty good, but it could have been better. It could have been a lot better. And I think one of the things that was confusing on the NBC's broadcast this year is the fact that the Breeders' Cup was being held on the West Coast at Santa Anita, in which the Breeders' Cup will be held the next 2 years at Del Mar in a row because of a contract that they worked out. So it's going to be really good, and it gives the media and the company advertisers a chance to market it because everything will be on West Coast time next year. And that's one of the things that you know, you got to take into consideration when you're doing your marketing, especially live marketing, like the Breeders' Cup. You know, you're 3 hours behind. So if you have a 5:30 post time for your Breeders' Cup Classic, you're looking at 8:30 in the East. You know, and 8:30 on a Saturday night, there's a lot of ball games. There's a lot of stuff on TV. People are going out, you know, to eat and things like that. So it becomes a marketing nightmare, you know, for the sponsors of it, you know, because of that time delay. But, you know, the only thing I can say is the viewership for Future Stars, which was the Friday program, was at 0.11 rating on U.S. television ratings for Friday. Sports are typically lower on the weekends. So, you know, they had a tough time there with it. You know, so now, you know, the marketing people, they've got the product, but the problem is you got to create a, you know, a market, literally, to fit that time slot, that they have there. This year, the first time the Breeders' Cup Classic was not, the final Breeders' Cup race. It was later in the programming, and they had a commitment to Big Ten. NBC had a commitment to Big Ten football coverage that began at 7 o'clock Eastern time. White Barrio won the Classic at 3:43 p.m. Pacific time, which was 6:43 Eastern time. So, you know, that made a big difference in itself right there from the marketing standpoint, because the Breeders' Cup, you know, is the best horses in the world racing on a 2-day schedule. They have the Future Stars on Friday, which are all the younger horses, the 2-year-olds, and they have a lot of the grass races and filly races and mare races on there. So that was a whole different, you know, thing that we had to get used to. And then on Saturday, you got so much competition that it was just, you know, unbelievable, you know, that it did as good as it did. But it gives everybody a year to get ready for next year. And I think it's going to work with the proper marketing and the proper distribution of information. And see, that's what I like about it. Now you got the cell phones, you got, you know, all the iPhones, you got all kinds of ways to watch, you know, the programming. You could literally be at the football game, you know, at a Big Ten game, for example, watching the game, and on your iPhone, you could be watching the Breeders' Cup Classic. You know, and that's what we have to do, is we have to gear our distribution accordingly. You know, we've got to make podcasts better. We've got to make, you know, the live television better. We've got to make delayed television better. You know, reruns really become, you know, popular. Do you have a program that's going to be aired on a delayed basis? Those are the kind of things that you look at for, you know, for what we're doing here in this business. And I tell you what, it's a nightmare. You know, like with me, I still haven't gotten into a schedule yet when I've got live programming coming from South Africa early in the morning. I got live harness racing coming from Europe and Sweden late at night that's live. I got live racing from Canada in the harness racing. It starts at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and goes to, you know, midnight. And all, it's kind of hard to get everything set up, you know, for that. But I've got my website set up now that on the first of the year, we're going to be able to, you know, be on time with this. We'll have a regular scheduled program. Now, like right now, I'm sitting here doing the show. And it's from the beginning, from the get-go. It's kind of rough. It's going to be a rough cut, like. But I'm actually filming my show now where I'm at. And I will be able to put that on my website, and I'll be able to use the videos and things that we're shooting this week, you know, next week on BBS Radio, because they do radio and TV. They do a good job of it. And what I like about it is that right now, today, is the day that we start filming the documentary, How They Get There, the 2024 Kentucky Derby. And it's really going to be interesting to do that, because we're going behind the scenes and we're going to take a look at, you know, how the owners get to the Kentucky Derby, how the jockeys, how the horses. It's a week-to-week update of who's in and who's out. You know, who's leading the way. And then 5 months from this Saturday, we will literally have the Kentucky Derby field of 20 horses. You know, we're looking at thousands of horses that are on their way to the Kentucky Derby from all over the world, and we're filming that. We're documenting that, who it is and who it isn't. We're going to following Todd Pletcher as our trainer. He trains a lot of good horses. He's won the Derby several times. He's won multiple Breeders' Cup races, stake races, grade ones. And he's always got a consistent, good product. He had Forte last year. He won the Derby with Always Dreaming and Super Saver. But he kind of follows the same pattern. So that's who we're following as a trainer. And then as an owner, we're following Spendthrift Farm. And how they do it, and the other owner I'm following is Mike Rapoli, the St. Elias Stable, how they get to the Derby. And right now, Todd has got the top two horses for the Derby next year. Their Fierceness, and he's earned over $1 million. Noted is right behind him. Stable Mates, they're here in South Florida. They'll be at Palm Beach Downs this winter. And they'll be running the usual routes that, you know, that Todd runs. Spencer Farm. Unbelievable on the breeding at Spencer Farm. Unbelievable. These guys have got stallions there that are that have done it all. They got Forte there that Pletcher had last year. They've got Into Mischief, which is one of the hottest stallions in the world right now. He's just breeding winners right and left. And they're old school. They're old school. And so we'll be following them. And then jockeys, we've kind of looking at the Ortiz brothers to follow. They're usually pretty consistent with their Derby mounts that they get. They're very good brothers. They're always battling for, you know, riding titles at the tracks they go to. So we'll be looking at the Ortiz brothers as our jockeys. And then, of course, we'll have the best blacksmith in the world. We're looking at Steve Norman. He is unbelievable on the horses that he has shod over the years, the stakes winners, the Derby horses. He's a fantastic horseman. And what's even better than being a good blacksmith, it is he's a better person. He's a good horse person. He's a good country horse country guy type of guy. He knows it all. Been there and done that. And he's also a good musician too. He's a good bluegrass musician. And so we're looking at Steve Norman, and we're going to find out just what he does and what he has to look for. And then, and how they get there, we're looking at Hallway Feeds. Hallway Feeds is a great company. They feed a lot of the stake horses, a lot of the Derby winners. You can get their feed anywhere in the world. And that's why I selected Hallway Feed, because I've used it before. And I know the quality of their product that they have. They're very, very good at what they do. You can call Hallway Feed in Lexington and talk to their people. And if you got a problem with a horse losing weight or, you know, gaining weight, or if you got a horse that are finicky eaters, you can go to them and they will analyze your situation, and they will literally create a feed for you and that horse. And that's what I like about it. And the other thing, the best thing in the world, is not only their staff, it's probably the best part of their business is their staff. But what I like about it is if you got a horse that you are racing in Kentucky or Florida, California, or wherever, and whatever racetrack you go to, whether it's in California, New York, Kentucky, Arkansas, Illinois, Florida, you know, wherever it's at, you can get that same bag of Hallway Feed right there at that location you're at. And they even do international. So your horse never gets off its feed. And that's what I like about it. That horse is getting the same feed wherever he goes, no matter what conditions he's in. He's getting the same feed, so it doesn't get his system out of balance. And that's what I like about that. And then the other thing that we're going to be doing is we're going to be talking about horse transportation, which I was involved in for a long time. And we're going to look at how they travel on the ground and how they travel in the air to get where they're going. It's an amazing segment, probably the best segment of the whole documentary. And there, you're going to see how they ride on vans and how they get up and down the road, just the process that they go through, what kind of containers they travel in, how well they adjust to the traveling. I had a horse that we were traveling, you know, for a long time up at Windstar, and he had to have a stall, box stall, facing backwards on the horse, on the van. So he liked to watch the cars go by, and he had to be out on the driver's side, and he just loved watching the cars go by. You know, that was his thing. If you tried to place him somewhere else, he did not like it. You know, he did not like him. And, you know, we'll explain to you how they ride and how you know, they're fed their hay and their water on the trip. And then the air miles that you can put on some of these horses and how they fly, it's shocking. You'll never believe that horses get in that box and they can fly from here to Japan or Hong Kong or to Australia and not miss a beat. You know, they got their water, they got their hay, they got their attendants on there. And, you know, a lot of horses fly back and forth from the east to the west coast to races. Some trainers that prefer training in Kentucky or Florida, but they race two or three times a year out in California. You know, and it's still a little bit over a four-hour trip out to California, which is nice, you know, to see. And then we go to owners. Where do the owners get the horses? Do the owners breed their own horses? Do they buy them at the sales, or do they buy them privately? And so what we do is we're taking a look at the sales. We're looking at Keeneland and Fassick Tipton sale that come up, how they're bought and sold, you know, there for the horse industry. Then we're talking about MyRacehorse.com, how they put together syndicates to where for a small amount of money you can actually own a horse that's running on the track. And Authentic was a classic. My Racehorse had Authentic, and it was a great situation. He won everything he could win. And so, you know, we go behind the scenes and look at the sales, what they're looking for at the sales, which is really good, you know, to see. And we've covered just about everything that we could. Oh, and then the most exciting part is the decision to run in the Kentucky Derby. You know, the owner's got to talk to the trainer. He's got to talk to the jockey. You know, you got to talk to everybody, you know, involved, from the blacksmith and the feed company. And you talk to everybody about running in the Derby, making sure that you have everything available for that horse, you know, when he gets there, you know, that type of thing. And so that's really going to be an interesting thing to see. And we follow, you know, like I said, all these people to the Derby every week. We're always, you know, filming or doing something about what they're doing that would pertain to how they get there, you know, the decisions that they have to make to get a horse to the Kentucky Derby. And it's going to be a real interesting documentary, you know, to see. You don't have to know a lot about horses to watch it, because by the time you get through with it, you're going to know all about horses, you know, that run in the Derby and run all over the world and everything. So that's what we're doing. And then now, you know, hey, it's the first of the year. 7 months from now, 5 months from now, we got the Triple Crown starts, the Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont. And those run through the 1st of May through the middle of June. And the Belmont this year and for the next year will be run at Saratoga, because they're rebuilding Belmont Park in Elmont, New York. They're rebuilding it. So the mile and a half Belmont Stakes will be run at a mile and a quarter, and it will be run at Saratoga, 24 and 25. So that changes. And then in July, we have the Olympics. And you'll see our show, Quest for Equine Gold, that's running now, about how the horses qualify and get to the Olympics. And we'll be talking with riders and trainers and farms that, you know, get their horses to the Olympics. And you know, the show horse industry is not like the standardbred or the thoroughbred or the quarter horse industry. It takes years to get a horse at Olympic quality show jumping, and the FEI and the USAF. It takes a long time to get that done. You know, some of these horses that are jumping and showing in the Olympics out here are, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, and they're training. And that's probably one of the hardest sports that you have to do is training show jumpers, you know, and dressage horses. It just takes hours and hours of practice day in and day out to get these horses to perfection. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. And you know what's really funny is here at Sunshine Meadows, we've got quite a few good horses here, and we got some horse people with international experience that ride at Wellington and World Equestrian Center and over in Europe. But what's funny is You don't realize it, but I see a lot of these girls and guys every day riding. And then before you know it, they're 19, they're 20, 21 years old. And I said, oh my goodness, where did it go? I remember when she was 15 and started out on this horse, or when he was, you know, 13 and started out on this horse. And now here they're 21 and 22 and they're riding in the Olympics. And, you know, it's kind of fun to follow them along on Quest for Equine Gold to see what they're doing and where they're going. You know, it's really interesting to see how it happens. It's good. It's really good. And then, you know, talking about the owners are the ones that really make it all go for all of the horse industry. It's really interesting to see how these owners make the decisions that they make. And, you know, in all divisions of the horses, whether it's the thoroughbreds, standardbreds, show horses, what have you, they all have a similar project in their associations, like USEF or FEI or AQHA or, you know, the USTA for standardbreds. This one that I follow along, and like I said, this is kind of like the rule of thumb for just about all the horse business. The Jockey Club and the Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association have a owner view. It's called the Thoroughbred Owner View, and it goes over all the things that that you need to know, you know, in the business. And what they do is they start at the top. And when they start at the top, you know, you're looking at, for the owners, they have all kinds of seminars that are going on. For example, they got accounting and tax considerations for owners. They have the implementation of a lot of different things that they have, you know, here. One of them would be HISA. That's the, you know, the association that kind of regulates everything. And what they do is they explain in all kinds of podcasts and you know, internet information on the implementation of, you know, the rules and regulations by HISA, which is really good. And you know, they know what they can and can't do. And once they're educated, you know, then it's a whole different ballgame, you know, for the owners to make sure that their money's being protected, because they're looking for the things that they need to be looking for. And then this is probably, I would say, the most important. Well, I mean, HISA is the most important, because that's about the safety of the horses and the employees and the farm and everybody to deal with it. But a lot of people get kind of kid me about this. I think every owner and every breed should have to go through this segment. For example, for the thoroughbreds, it's called handicapping for owners. And what they do is they teach you how to handicap in the horse business. And that's what the owners need to do. They need to learn any and everything about a horse. They just can't say, oh, well, he's nice looking. They need to learn how to, you know, look at a horse, go out and see, you know, make sure he's got straight legs, make sure he's got everything in its proper place. You know, and kind of go from there. But that's a good one. Then the other one they have, you got to develop a business plan. And that all starts with the owner. That all starts with the owner. First of all, you got to have the money. And when you get the money, then you get a trainer. You sit down, you talk with the trainer. You tell the trainer what you'd like to do, which naturally we all like to win the Kentucky Derby, you know, or a big stake race. And, you know, the trainer says, well, you know, how much money have you got? You know, and the owner tells the trainer, and the trainer says, okay, well, we'll go looking for horses, and we'll go out to the sales ring, and we'll see what, you know, what we can find out, what we can get. And then once you get a horse, the trainer sits down and comes back, you know, a few weeks later and says, okay, you know, if we're going to try to run in the Kentucky Derby, here's the layout of the path that we're taking, the journey that we're going on to the Derby. This is how they get there, Mr. Owner. And then the trainer lays out to them, you know, we're going to try to break the horse's maiden, which means win his first race. We're going to try to do that, we'll say, like it's Saratoga. And the reason I picked Saratoga is to break your maiden that is because it's one of the most high quality race meets in the country. And if you break your maiden at Saratoga, then that adds a lot of value to your horse because the trainer has always got to think and the owner has always got to think, how do I build up a resume for my horse for when he stops racing or she stops racing and possibility of going to the breeding shed? You've got to have a resume that is stellar, that's second to none. And if you went at a track like Saratoga, Belmont, Keeneland, Churchill, Santa Anita, Del Mar, you know, you're big in the game. You're big in the game for sure, breeding-wise. Not saying that you're going to breed something that's going to come out and win, you know, the Derby, but at least it's a good resume. And that's what the trainer has to sit down and explain to, you know, to the owner. You know, this is how we're going to go, and this is where we're going to go. And then the trainer has to have a secondary plan because if you really don't, if it doesn't pan out the way you think it should, then there's a secondary plan that you can get your horse on that will keep him right at that top level and maybe get him into the top level by winning key races down the road. So that's what you have to do with the owner once you get your horse going. Then when you get the horse, you know, now that you got a horse for the owner, you got to sit down and you got to tell the owner. I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. Brookledge is our transportation people. They're very good at what they do, one of the best in it that there is. So they're going to do that at everything. So, you know, there you go. You're taking it and looking at that. And then you go, okay, get with the feed company. You get with the, you know, all the things that are involved in your programming. And make sure everybody is on the same page. That's what you got to do. Make sure that they're on the same page. So I'm excited about that, getting to the Derby. And then after you get everything done and you do an evaluation on your horse, at the end of the day, sometimes in the 1st of April, you got to make a decision. Are we going to the Derby? And well, you know, you've got enough points because you have run all the right races. You've done everything that you could possibly do. You know, you do with that. And then you kind of go from there. You know, and then once you decide to run in the Derby, the next thing you have to do is you got to sit down with your whole staff, all your owners. You got to sit down with everybody and say, okay, here's our Derby week plan. This is what we're going to do. And it's very important. That's really an important part of the getting to the Derby is that Derby week plan, because you've got to deal with owners. You got to deal with the press. You got to deal with, you know, the feed companies, the blacksmiths. You got to make sure everybody is all in that 10 days. That's the 10 days of, you know, no mistakes. Because your horse is trained up to the Derby. You know, you got to get him through those 10 days. He's got to get acclimated to the crowd and to the situation. You got to decide, when do you ship into the Derby? Do you ship in the Thursday beforehand, or do you ship in 10 days beforehand? There's just so many decisions like that that have to be made. You know, like a, you know, what color jacket am I going to wear? What shoes am I going to wear? No, you know, but you know, you kind of get the gist of the whole thing is what you have to do. And then, you know, you get with your veterinarian, your blacksmith, and they're right there and you're ready to go. And then you just try to, you know, ride out the last 10 days, get him out to the track in the morning, you know, get him exercise and keep an edge on him. You know, get your staff ready to go. You know, all those things that you have to do. That's the thing that you do in the show horse business. You do the same in the standard bred business. For like the, you know, the Breeder's Crown or for the Hamiltonian or for the Little Brown Jug. You know, it's all pretty much the same format, but it's just, you know, different horses. And it's organization. You know, the owner has to take the lead and distribute out the responsibilities down to the trainer and then down to the jockey and to the grooms and the exercise riders and, you know, the hot walkers. And you got a lot on your mind there that you got to start a year in advance, you know, to do. And so, you know, that's the whole thing about it. And then in order to keep your horses up there in the limelight, as they say, you got to get together with all the news outlets, you know, the harness riders, the thoroughbred riders, the blood horse, you know, the news outlets. You know, you got to make sure that you have time every day. And I suggest this, you know, and that you keep this, in fact, for the owner and for the trainer, that you make yourself available for, you know, for interviews at a certain time every day. Not just willy-nilly, you know, oh, here's so-and-so from Sports Illustrated, here's the guy from ESPN, the guy from the Blood Horse. You make it known, well known, whether you're in the show horses, standardbreds, AQHA, you know, thoroughbreds. This is the time that I am available for, you know, news interviews. You know, you set aside an hour a day and have it on a daily basis, you know, when you're going to be there. And that stops a lot of headaches. You know, it's all part of the organization of what you're doing. And, you know, so you do that. So, you know, there's a lot to, you know, a lot to the horse people business that a lot of people don't know about. And that's why distribution is going to be very key, you know, that you educate yourself as an owner, and then you the trainer gets educated, and all the people in your organization, no matter whether it's show horses, standardbreds, you know, thoroughbreds, whatever, you do that. You make sure that you've got everything there. One of the big things that we have to do, you make sure you got your telephone backup. You don't just rely on one telephone. You know that you've got a backup phone that you can use if something happens. And with the cellular phones the way they are today, you know, they're fairly inexpensive, and it pays off to have that backup, you know, on there. Then you make sure that, like all the trainers and everybody, and shoot, even the grooms, you know, and hot walkers, everybody, if you got an email or a website that you can go to, that's very beneficial. Because it helps you with the distribution of information that you might need to give out or that you might need to get. And that's one of the greatest things in the world. And well, like on my website there, at IEM, you know, we got quick links to Walmart. We got quick links to, Ship that delivers groceries. They'll even deliver groceries no matter where you're at in the country. They're like hallway feeds. They'll deliver to you anywhere in the country once you get in signed up with them, and they will deliver your groceries. They will deliver pharmaceuticals. They deliver whatever you need directly to your barn, at the racetrack or at the showgrounds. They'll deliver to your house, no matter where you're at. When I was in the hospital, I had things delivered by Ship to me in the hospital, and that really helped because. You know, and my family and my friends, you know, they brought me all the things that I needed, but, I was an internet or a phone call away from getting that delivered to me even in the hospital. And I was in there for a long time and I used them quite a bit. You can get food from them. You know, you can get, all kinds of things delivered. They got laundry services that, can deliver to right to pick up at the track and deliver to you. You know, at the farm, at the track, at the hotel, just like Ship can, they can get it all done for you. And, you know, we've got links here on our website that you'll be able to do that too. But those are the kind of things that you have to think about in the business is your time. You know, your time's got to be valued and you get in and get consistent in the right things that you do. And, you know, like we were saying, on how you get to the Kentucky Derby, that's going to be a tremendous documentary. It's going to be, you don't have to watch or know much about horses, but when you watch how they get there, you'll see how they ride on the airplanes, how they ride on the vans when you buy them as a yearling, how they break them, how they get them ready for riding and racing. You know, it's going to be good. It's going to be a good show. You know, with it. And we're doing the same thing with the show horses too. It's exciting to see, you know, what they're doing with it. The horse business is a great business. Like for example, we have a lot of people coming to, out here to the farm the last couple of weeks. Kids wanted to go on horseback riding for Christmas. And we had several of the kids that have come out and first time riding, and they really enjoyed it, you know, with different trainers that we have here. And now they're coming back and they're going to start taking lessons. You know, they're going to start taking lessons. And like I tell a lot of the people who come out here, I said, you know, you don't realize something. When you're out here, you know, with your kid and this, and your kid likes this horse and loves to ride, you know, can't wait to ride again and everything. I said, you want to know the best part about this? This is the best part about it. It's that those kids can, if they get good in what they're doing and they're riding, they can get a full ride scholarship to college. Texas A&M's got a good school. Florida's got a good school. Florida Atlantic. They've got their horses here at Sunshine Meadows. Florida Atlantic is another school. You know, all these schools have you know, equestrian teams. And you can get scholarships. And, man, that really helps down the road, that, you know, when you're trying to get a scholarship, you know, and you can go in and for riding. You know, that's really good. But, you know, the horse industry is really good. We got all kinds of things that are coming up. I'm trying to get this podcast better. I got, like, a ton of work ahead of me this next week to end the year right and start it off right. Well, like I said, next week we'll have a video. You know, you actually get to see who I am. And that'll be a big joke. You guys will like that one. But, no, like I said, distribution is about what we are here, about distributing, information on the equine industry, the events, the things that you can go to. And, you know, you don't have to be a horse person to go and enjoy a horse event. That's the long and short of it. You know, you can go out and watch them jump. You can watch dressage. That's, dressage is an event where the horses dance to music, which is just unreal. You know, then we have the standard breds. We've got the American Quarter Horse Association things that we're going to be showing on there. That's the real cowboys, the roping and the riding and you know, the whole nine yards that we do there. So, it's exciting to do that. You know, like I said, it's a great time. It's a good fellowship. You make a lot of friends, and, you know, you don't have to be a thoroughbred guy or a quarter horse guy. Everybody gets together when you're involved in horses. You all got your stories that you have. So, but that's what we're pretty much about here. I rambled on long enough, and thank God I don't have any listeners, because if I did, oh, they'd be calling them. You should have said this. You should have done this. This is the way you need to do that. Back in the day, you know, and all. But, no, that's what we're trying to do here. Hopefully we'll get better and better. And if we don't, it's kind of like playing golf, just as long as you're having fun. And I'm having fun with these podcasts and all, and always trying to make it better. And if you got any suggestions, just be sure to email me at ienequinetv@gmail.com, you know, or go to www.ientv.org. And let us know what you'd like to see. And we got our Christmas movie. Our Christmas movie is on IENTV.org. It's a great movie. So tune in and watch it. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas to everybody. And we'll talk to you next week for our end of the year show.